Don't miss the 23 Days of Christmas in Florida's largest poker room. High hands every half hour win over $270,000 in prizes, including TVs, Apple products, Xbox, PS4, Beats by Dre headphones, Bose speakers, and WSOPC Million Dollar Guarantee vouchers. All this December at Palm Beach Kennel Club, where the Mega Bad Beat is back. Plus, it's your last chance to win a new Mitsubishi Mirage on Friday, December 26th.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's December 26, 2014. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Santa Scott Long.
Santa Scott Long?
Yeah, I got my little Green Bay Packers Santa hat. Actually, I didn't. Laura got hurt. But, you know, we're headed up to the Lambeau here in a couple days.
Yeah.
Right after Christmas, and so I'm going to put a little weight on the cruise. So I think I can pull off the Santa thing. I have no gifts to give anyone, but other than that.
You could definitely pull it off, buddy. So that's cool. Of course, we're not really after the holidays here. We're before. We're taping before. So if something happens somehow on December 25th, December 24th, and don't get mad at us. We taped it early this week. But we're off the ship. And we're happy to be here. I'm still kind of sick. Not as sick as I was on the show. more mentally now than anything. But, this is one of the few times that big news didn't happen while we were gone and actually worked in our favor. Big news happened basically when we were getting ready to record the show.
Yeah, just, yesterday, World Series of Poker released their dates for next year's World Series of Poker. The schedule won't be released until January, as usual. But the 2015 WSOP is going to be back at the Rio next year, May 27th through July 14th. Interestingly enough, I don't think the press release mentioned the November 9. So I guess we'll wait and see whether they're still doing that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I didn't think about that.
Can't believe they didn't change it, but it didn't say it specifically in there.
Yeah.
But a couple things that they did mention. One big new event that everybody's buzzing about already. It's going to kick off the series, the very first tournament. It's going to be called the Colossus.
Yeah.
Sounds like a half of a sci-fi movie, right? Colossus versus Mega Gator. The Colossus, it's a $565 buy-in, which is way reasonable for a World Series. I mean, normally you're talking $1,500 buy-ins. $565 buy-in, $5 million guaranteed prize pool. Two starting flights each day for 2 days, I think, and re-entries as well, too. So lots of opportunity for people to fire a couple bullets if they want. And that's going to be pretty massive, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. They said it was the cheapest buy-in at the World Series in 35 years.
Boy, that's hard to believe, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy.
Can you imagine $565 30 years ago?
I know. So here's the deal, is I think that we can afford this.
We certainly can.
I think this is more in line with what could swallow. I think that they should do this a lot more often. I think that just because people can afford to spend thousands of dollars on entries doesn't necessarily make it more important. And if you can get more people in an event to prove who the best player is, that to me is pretty cool. And not that this is the main event or anything, but in a $5 million guarantee, that's going to bring them out in droves, man.
Yeah, I would say not only is this an affordable for you and me, this is really affordable for almost every poker player.
Yeah.
I know there's a lot of people out there who say, $565, I've never paid more than $30 for a tournament ever. You know, if you're going to take a shot at anything, anywhere, I think this is the shot to take now. I mean, $565, it's a little bit, obviously, it's it could be out of bankroll for a lot of people. It's certainly out of the bankroll, I'm not saying that. But, I mean, out of the terms of affordability, you've got 6 months here now to save up for it. You know, quit going to Starbucks one day a week.
Yeah.
And you got your buy-in. And take a shot at it. It's no limit hold'em. All right? Now, obviously, there's going to be a ton of pros in this, obviously, because it's a sweet prize pool. And then they're going to think it's going to be a pretty soft field, which it probably will be.
Right.
But anything can happen to no limit hold'em. All right? This isn't like, deuce to seven, triple draw, low ball. Right?
Right.
So, I mean, you can get in there, you double up on one hand, and you can be the next Darwin Moon in this thing. And I don't know what first place will be. I mean, I'm at 20%, so, I mean, this could be a $1 million payday for someone for $565.
Man, think about that. $565, millionaire. That's crazy.
And not only that, but they're probably doing satellites before. So yeah. Super Table satellites for like $75-$80 or something like that. So even if you say, all right, Scott, you're crazy, I can't afford $565. You're going to tell me now you can't afford $75?
Right.
Go out there and take a shot. But yeah. It's going to be pretty interesting.
You know, this is probably going to really help out WSOP.com, too. Like, not that they're...
Oh, my gosh,
but, I mean, you can imagine how many satellites are going to be for this thing. This is going
to
be huge.
That's actually a great idea, because once you get it, you don't have to be a Nevada resident. You just have to be on Nevada soil to play in that. So go out there a couple days early, and you probably get, you know, $5 satellites on there where you get lucky that... Can you imagine that? You run a $5 online satellite into a $1 million prize pool?
Oh, man, that would be the Chris Moneymaker, the sequel.
Yeah, no doubt.
Right there. That is crazy. So I'm definitely looking forward to that one. That's going to be a huge field. That's going to be like, that's going to be a huge field, man. I can't even imagine. That guarantee alone has to be, what, 10,000 people? Am I right?
Yeah. I mean, let's assume they're being generous and... taking $65 in juice, which they probably might take more than that, but you're talking $5 million. Let me do my. I can't believe I have to. Actually
well, divided by 500 is 10,000 people. Yep. If they went 500 plus 65, yeah. So that's 10,000 people. Can you imagine? That's the largest tournament like ever. If they
well, that,
make
that's
the
goal. When they set it out, they wanted to have the largest live tournament in history. So
that's what it's going to be. That's going
to
be crazy.
Probably what it's going to take to do it.
Wow, 10,000 people. One tournament. You're the king if you win that tournament.
No doubt.
Wow.
No doubt.
That bracelet should be like a WCW belt buckle size bracelet or something. That's massive.
Yeah, I mean, you win that tournament. Again, like, I don't know what the prize pool is going to be, but I'm guessing that's going to be $1 million on top.
Yeah.
You know, if they just hit the guarantee, obviously, if they get a lot more people, which I'm sure that's what they're hoping for, right?
Yeah.
And then the prize pool is going to be more. That's more than ninth place in the main event made last year.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yep. Wow. Unbelievable.
The heart, with the far less effort.
That's right.
All right. Well, like we said, the rest of the schedule is going to come out in January, but they gave us a couple of teasers here. Two other popular events that debuted last year that are back are the Millionaire Maker, which is a $1,000 buy-in tournament with a $1 million top prize guarantee. So, yeah, two ways of being a millionaire.
Yeah.
Small buy-ins.
Yeah.
And then the Monster Stack. We'll be back this year as well, too. And they're going to have two one-drop events, but not the big one for the one-drop, which obviously is held every 2 years. But I think they're having the little drop, which is $1,111.
Right.
And then some kind of a not-so-big but bigger one-drop that's $111,111.
Oh, yeah.
And then all the cheapy tournaments, which are the Millionaire Maker, the Colossus, and the 1500s are going to be on weekends like they did last year, which I thought was a stroke of genius that they finally figured that out.
Right.
And get the weekend warriors.
Working man. Yeah, exactly.
Fly out on a Thursday, fly home on a Monday with a bracelet in your hand. We'll see what else they come up with. But I think that they got their headline with the Colossus.
Yeah, thanks for giving us a lead item to talk about. Well, this is funny. This has been on our file for a while. It's from O'Malley, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought this was hilarious, so I'm going to read it. It says, it's happened to O'Malley. He said, I was in a typical 1-2 no limit hold'em cash game. After the flop, a guy bets $10, two red chips, into the $25 pot. The lady seated immediately to his left had four chips in her stack, two green $25 chips, a red $5 chip, and a blue $1 chip. She's an older lady and ornery. She grabbed one of the green chips and threw it in. The action folded back around to the original razor. The dealer gave the lady three red chips back as change, but she protested, saying she wanted to raise. The dealer explained, since she only put in a single chip in the pot and didn't announce her intentions, it would be counted as a call. See, now, she had taken Scott Long's Poker 101 course. She would know to verbalize all our actions.
Always verbalize your actions, yeah.
That's the problem.
No matter how ornery you are.
So she asked for a four. Dealer obliged. When the four came over, the woman started shaking her head and saying, no, no, not you. Someone else. I don't want you coming on over here. She said to the floor. So she says, I want another floor. The floor assured her he would make a fair decision and asked the dealer to explain what happened. She began saying she wanted an appeal on his decision, which he hadn't even given yet. The dealer tried to explain the situation while the woman kept butting in, contradicting the dealer, and being rather childish. After the floor was able to sort out what happened, he said her action was a call. The whole time he was explaining why, she was just saying, "Appeal! Appeal! Appeal!" The floor was getting noticeably agitated and finally said, "I'll get another floor over here, but he's just going to tell you the same thing." Another floor came over, made the same decision, to which the lady cursed the poker room staff's incompetence, grabbed her remaining chips, and left the table, mucking her cards in the middle of the hand after calling the bet but wanting to raise. The floor tried to stop her from mucking by telling her the hand was still alive, and that she left the poker room, they'd award the pot to the man who had made the initial bet, which, coincidentally, had flopped the nuts straight to the jack. He just chuckled, and we all scratched our heads and laughed at the woman's peculiar behavior. Have you ever seen anything like this before?
Like that? No.
Never like that.
Lots of other crazy stuff, but...
I always see crazy stuff, but I never see... something, and that's pretty funny. She's like, no, not you, because you rule against me. You do the right thing when you come over. I'm looking for a stupid floor to give me the, you know.
Yeah, it's almost like the dating game. Can you line up the three eligible floors? And we're going to let the person calling the floor ask a series of questions and decide which floor is going to go on a fabulous trip to Santa Monica.
Floor number two. If you were a sundae, what ice cream would you use to describe yourself? You know, it's like crazy, but it is. I can see, like, if you've butted heads with a floor before, you didn't like his ruling, you might say, give me another floor. But she was protesting before the guy even showed up.
Yeah, I was going to say, obviously this woman was not going to be happy with anything, and that's difficult because, you know, those of us in business have to deal with this all the time, and, you know, this whole customer is always right thing that someone started long ago. I really want it to be correct, but it's not always, as in this case, she obviously was wrong here, right?
Yeah.
And made it worse, so this is the kind of stuff you deal with, and I think the staff was very accommodating. I mean, I know a lot of poker rooms that would say, I'm not calling another floor over. I mean, this is 101. This isn't even one of these controversial ones that we asked Sam about on Call the Floor, right? This is just cut and dried, right, as much as it is.
Yeah.
This is one of those players you're just not going to make happy. So, in a lot of ways, you know, some of the poker managers I talk to, obviously they want to be very accommodating to their staff, I mean, to their players as much as possible. But there's also the other side that says, you know, hey, when you've got a player in there that's not going to be happy, and they're going to cause other players that are happy to be unhappy, it's probably good that they leave.
Absolutely.
You hate to be the one to say that, but, you know, if she's going to grab her chips and walk out, hey, the room is better for it in that case. Well, the other thing I was laughing about here when you hear the appeal, you remind me all the way back to Little League. And I sucked at Little League. I set the world record for the most dandelions picked in right field.
Shocking.
Yeah, exactly. But I remember this one year, you know, a little known corollary in the Faber College Handbook. Some manager figured out he could appeal the ump's decision. Now, you know, back in Little League, the umps are like 14.
Yeah.
Players are 12, you know.
Yeah.
And some manager, oh, I can appeal. And at that point, every manager in every team appealed every decision for the rest of the year. These two-hour baseball games that were already too long now lasted 4 hours because they had appeal.
Yeah, exactly. And in this case, then it held up that game long enough
to
not only have to get one floor, but then hear that whole thing out and then ask for another floor. And then it's just ridiculous. She clearly was making a move. It didn't work. And she knew she was going to lose the hand. And so she left. And, oh, man, just some people, you just can't make them happy no matter what you do.
But, you know, that's why, I mean, you don't get that online, right? I miss online. Trust me, I miss online poker. But you don't get that online. You get the guy just flames out in the chat box, which is funny.
Right.
But this is a story that O'Malley's going to remember the rest of his life, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, it makes, of course, everybody lost a couple hands here because of all the hullabaloo over it, right? But obviously everybody enjoyed this thing, right? This is theater. Didn't have to pay a dime for it.
Yeah.
And that's what makes playing live, I think, pretty funny.
Yeah, no, and totally, yeah. See, that's what I always thought the same thing. I always thought online was for money and live poker is for, like, social entertainment. You know, not that it's not for money, don't get me wrong, but, I mean, you know, they're totally different animals. And yeah, the closest I've ever come to this was like the guy with the short arms.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Short arms.
Insisting that he gets the middle Z because he has short arms. Yeah, whatever, dude.
But see, things like this happening, this is what, you know, I always chuckle because I travel a ton, you know, right? And I'm always walking out of a poker room, and I promise you, 98% of the times I'm walking out of the poker room, there's some guy 3 feet outside of the poker room on his cell phone. Oh my gosh, and then I raised and he called me with tens, can you believe that? And I just laugh. I'm like, come on. I'm sure whoever it is on the other side of the phone has heard this 100 times in different things. No one wants to hear your bad beat stories, right? But everybody wants to hear about the crazy lady.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So start saving up these stories. So from now on, you know, when you take a cooler, you go out and you call your friend, remember the fable of O'Malley, and just repeat the story like it's your own.
I
promise you, the other person on the other side of the phone is going to appreciate it far more than your ace is getting cracked for the 4,000th time of your life.
You're so right, too, because I when I was covering the Antiup event at Palm Beach, I sat right by the exit of the tournament area, and every time a guy got knocked out, you could hear every single one of them walking by, dropping F-bombs, saying, how does he call me there? F and this, F and that. And they're almost identical conversations. Then you see them flipping open their phone or pulling out their phone and getting ready to call their buddy to tell them, this is what I had, this is where I was, can you believe you did this to me? You're exactly right. It's exactly what they do. They all do the same. No one leaves quietly.
No. Oh. And they're all hilarious. They're all hilarious.
Yeah, unbelievable.
All right, well, while we were on the ship, our restock the shelves is exploding. Here's a list of new rooms that have been added to it since we last talked to you guys. Foxwoods Resort Casino in Connecticut, Harrah's Cherokee in North Carolina, Daytona Beach Kennel Club in Derby Lane in Florida, Caesar's Palace, Golden Nugget in Planet Hollywood in Las Vegas, the Bonfire Bar and Grill in North Carolina, Little Creek Casino Resort in Washington, and Advanced Poker Training Online are the latest rooms to join the January 19th Restock the Shelves Food Bank Initiative. And for some reason, if you haven't heard the show in the last month or so, what we're doing is just getting people to come out and play poker like they normally would, bring a couple cans of food or some money to help your local food banks out. So really hoping people come out and support this. And we're still looking for a lot of volunteers at some of these venues. And at this point, really all we're asking you to do as a volunteer is show up and play, which I know everybody's listening to the show likes to do, right?
Right.
And I actually do a lot. So if you can help us out and be our representative at some of these events, or there's still time to talk your favorite poker venue into joining as well, too. You can get all your information on this at antiupmagazine.com/restock.
And a little closer to home for our Antiup cruise is Melbourne Greyhound Park in Melbourne, Florida, which is pretty much central east Florida. It's having a mega stack tournament on January 10th to award packages to our February 9th cruise out of Port Canaveral. And Derby Lane in St. Petersburg, Florida has added more giveaways for the same cruise throughout January. All details are available at antiupcruises.com. And a special announcement that the only inside staterooms left for our April 10th sailing out of Baltimore are in Antiup's control. So that means all we have is inside left, right? We don't have any.
No. It means we have balconies and window ocean views available.
All right.
But there are no more inside. You can't go to RoyalCaribbean.com and book an inside stay.
Got you. Okay.
We got the only ones left. So.
We have the only ones that are left. So.
And until January 17th, at that day, we have to give them back. So if you're looking to come and you're like, oh, wait till the last minute, do not wait till the last minute.
We should have Royal Caribbean put that on the site.
Yeah, I'm
inside,
sure they...
Inside State Cabin is still available at Antiup.
Yeah.
magazine.com.
I'm sure they'd apply.
That would be awesome. So, yeah, listen, so if you want to join us on a cruise, you only got to January 17th to get those cabins, so act now or regret it later, like that old lady at the table who wanted to bet $25. Each week we spotlight a listener who called our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emailed us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like they do with Call the Four and Hand of the Week, we'll send them something cool. This comes from Bill Galentine. He says, I play a lot of sit-and-goes online, and I do pretty well. I don't often play multi-table tournaments. Do you think there is a difference? Like, a sit-and-go is more like a sprint, and a multi-table is more like a marathon?
Yes, perfect. Moving on.
All right, so that's true. I mean, there's different strategies, though, I think.
Absolutely different strategies.
Clearly different strategies, but yeah, I think one's a sprint and one's a marathon. That's pretty much right on the button.
And it's also relative, too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you treat a sit-and-go like a sprint, you're probably not playing it correctly. Maybe you are, maybe not. A sit and go is going to last an hour and a half, right?
Yeah.
So I guess it all depends when you consider, you know, the early stages of it or early stages of a marathon, right? Mm. You know, if you're a Kenyan, you run a marathon in 2 hours, right?
Right.
If you're a fat guy like me, six Jeez. Hours, they're calling the ambulance that's trailing behind the marathon is going to pick you up, right? So
right.
There's a difference between, you know, how you play it. But it's a good general analogy, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we could do a whole show on the specific strategies of each. And by the way, one of our columnists, Eric Bremmett, I'm sorry, Mark Bremmett, is doing a series right now in our magazines over the next, well, I guess did one last issue, and then he's doing a couple of, but it's about how sit and goes, playing sit and goes can help your game overall, multi-table
Absolutely.
Game too. So you should probably pick up and read that series, either read it online or pick up one of our copies. But, you know, there are specific strategies for each. But yeah, you got to remember that one's going to be over an hour and a half, the other one's going to take all day or multiple days. So clearly they are different. I think that if you do well in sit and goes, you could do well in multi-table tournaments. You just treat each table that you're at kind of like a sit and go, but you know, obviously the stacks are growing and massive. And
yeah, I'd say to that end, I think if you're a sit and go player, you have a better chance of succeeding in the multi-table format than if you're a multi-table person.
Yeah,
succeeding in the sit and go.
Yeah, because right? Yeah, exactly. Cause if you're in the multi-table mentality. And then you get to a tournament that's going to be over an hour and a half. You might take too long to get going or something. So, yeah.
Kind of like the limit to no limit. You know,
yeah.
I think limit players can make that transition to no limit much more easily. Much more easily?
Yeah, that's almost
more,
correct.
Yeah. More easily than no limit players can make the transition to limit.
Yeah, that's a good point. So,
but I've always said this from the beginning. I think sit and goes are the best way to learn poker. Whether you're a cash game player or I think even for a cash game player because... obviously, it's different than a cash game, but I mean, you know, the crews. We have this round table. We're talking to people, and you know, they don't want to. We've all gone through this, right? We don't want to be the guy that walks in the poker room, puts $500 down, and one hand you're out, right?
Yeah.
So then what do you do? Then you end up going in the dreaded 2-4 limit game, right, and buying for the minimum for $20, and you lose $20 in 20 minutes. Which is the better education?
Right.
Probably neither. But sit and go is you got cost certainty and time certainty for the most part, and you can get a good feel for the poker, I think. And then obviously it's not the same as cash, but I think you can use that experience.
No, absolutely. I mean, there is a huge shock when you first play cash after playing sit and goes, and some guy turns over 5-7, and there's no way you can have that. This isn't a tournament, buddy. He knows he can rebuy and get all your money, and it's real money when he wins it. So, but yeah, absolutely. It's the cheapest way to be able to play as much poker and see the flow and get, you know, the people's tendencies, that kind of thing, down for the cheapest amount of money. So, absolutely.
But I guess the Bill's first question, yeah, if you're doing well in sit and goes online, Bill, you'll probably do well in multi-tables.
Yeah,
but you might find that they're not as profitable. I mean, I would love just to sit and play sit and goes all day long. That's what I miss about online the most.
Yeah.
Because once you get into that rhythm, you know, you're cashing 50% of the time. I mean, that's huge.
Yeah, absolutely. If you knew you were going to make more than you put down every other time you played, you know, you're going to play.
Yeah, you're not going to make Colossus $1 million. Don't but it's a grind. You're going to grind it out and do well. Absolutely.
Well, you could do like Javad Khan and do like 70 sit and goes at once.
That's true. There you go.
You never know. All right, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been. You can email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com, and we'll have Golden Nugget Las Vegas poker director Sam Minatello tell you how he would have ruled. This week's sponsor is PokerRadius.com, poker's newest social networking site and home of the Annie Up group discussions. Comes from Chuck Quigley. This was on PokerRadius.com, Annie Up group. He says, Annie Up Nation, maybe you guys can help. I was recently at a no-limit 1-2 cash table when I was visiting a friend in Pennsylvania. We had a full table, and at one point, the player in the 3-seat had friends of his always stopping by. My friend and I were on the opposite side of the table, so we really couldn't understand what they were talking about, but the player kept getting up and leaving for 30 seconds or so, and then running back to the table to either fold or play his hand. In one specific hand that I was in, he ended up leaving the table to go talk to one of his friends that called him over, and since the dealer was getting a little bent out of shape with all the back and forth, she ended up mucking his hand after 20 seconds or so. The player ended up coming back just seconds later after she mucked his hand. The dealer explained herself and basically said, if you're in the hand, you need to be present at the table. The player didn't fight the dealer's action, but I'm curious, what are the rules for when that happens? If you're in the hand and it's your action, if you leave for a few seconds or even 10 or 20 seconds or even 30 or 60 seconds, what's the cutoff and what's the procedure to fold that player's hand?
All right, before I say what Sam says, I got a question for you, Chris.
Uh-huh.
Because I read this differently the first time I read it. And then when Sam answered it, I'm like, oh, okay, I must have misunderstood it. And now when you just read it again, I'm like, I'm going back to the way I thought it was.
Okay.
So it seemed to me that on the first reading of this, what happened is Joe Annoying dealt into a hand, and while he's in the hand, gets up to go over and tell his friend about how his tennis just got cracked, right?
Right.
Or, hey, I just listened to this great podcast. Let me tell you the story of O'Malley, right?
Right.
And then comes back and wants to finish the hand, all right? That's what I thought it was. Uh-huh. Obviously, Sam answered it differently, as in you were just, the hand was over, and you go up and talk to someone, and then they deal you in, and then the dealer looks around, you're not around, mucks your hand. So which do you think he means?
Well, the sentence that gets me is when he says, the player kept getting up and leaving for 30 seconds or so, and then running back to the table to either fold or play his hand. So
exactly.
That sounds like, the way it's written, it makes it sound like he could have been dealt a hand, looked at it, ran, talked to his players, then came back. You can't leave your hand. Your hand's dead if you leave it. So I think he means when the hand was over, he got up, went to the buddy, started talking to him, saw the dealer was about to deal, would run back over
right. When
the cards were the last. Because some places have you have to be in the seat before the first card is dealt. Some have it that you have to be in the seat by the last card.
Yeah.
So
TDA rules first card.
Yeah, TDA rules are first card. So
it's a cash game, obviously.
Yeah, so it's, I don't know what the deal is. If they're saying, you know, he could deal until the last card gets to the 10th player, then he's got all that time to be bullcrapping with his friends and then running back. So, you know, I felt like the guy may have been doing a mix of these things, to be honest with you.
Okay.
That's how I felt.
I was going to say, if you're a Deutsche Bank in one way, you're probably a Deutsche Bank in every way, right?
Yeah, I felt like he was doing everything to just get up and talk to his friends, whether the hand was going. Because he could have looked at his hand, actually could have been in the one seat, he could have been in the 10 seat, he could have been like, this is taking forever. Hey, man, what's going on? Walk over to him and then run back to fold his hand or whatever. Because the dealer's not going to reach over and grab your cards out of action, you know what I mean, to fold you, unless it gets to you and you're not there. So
right.
I felt like it might have been a combination of things here.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll give you Sam's answer. You'll know which way he
moves
in. But either way, it's good information.
Yeah.
All right. Sam says, we work in a customer service industry, so trying to accommodate the customer's needs are our goals. With that being said, there comes a time when we need to figure out if going above and beyond for customers causing poor customer service for everyone else seated at the table. I personally feel this is one of these situations. In a tournament setting, the TDA has a standardized set of rules address these types of topics. I like the TDA rule, which states if a person is not within arm's reach of their seat when the first card is dealt off the deck, then the hand is declared dead. Tournaments are run according to a time limit, so a rule like this prevents constant stoppage of a hand to accommodate someone who likes to socialize back and forth with players in different tables. Cash games are not run according to a time limit, so we can treat the scenario differently. My opinion of this matter is I like to have my staff go the extra mile as long as we aren't creating a problem for the masses. With that being said, I like to have my dealers deal in a player if they're coming back from the bathroom or smoke break because it's a scenario that isn't happening very often. If it doesn't stop the ebb and flow of the current gameplay. In this particular situation, I would politely have the floor explain to the players running back and forth that in the best interest of the players to a seat at the table, we would not be dealing them in a hand unless they are seated at the table as well. Every poker room, of course, has their individual house rules, so this may differ from room to room, but that is my feeling on the scenario.
Yeah, I kind of feel like that's the way this was going, was that the guy was, like, away with his friends, and then the dealer was dealing him in because he was within eyesight, which is what happens a lot. When dealers can see the other player, they deal him in, even though they're not seated, especially in a cash game, almost always in a cash game. Or they'll be like, you want a hand? As they're dealing, and then the guy's like, yeah, I'm in, and then they run, you know, they run over. So if this guy kept doing that every single time, yeah, I'd have a problem with it.
Yeah.
But, you know, once in a while, that's one thing. Guy went on a smoke break, went to the bathroom, that's something. But if you're doing it every hand because your buddies, tell your buddies to come over to the table.
Yeah, I was going to say, move to their table, you come to our table, whatever. You know, and then
exactly.
You guys sit there and just sing kumbaya at the table. Don't to slow down my game.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. Cash games and tournaments, they're just so different.
Yeah, but I think this is another good example of what we talked about earlier in the show that, you know, you want to do as much as you possibly can to accommodate your players. But once that accommodation infringes on other players, now you're doing damage to them, and that's the line you got to figure out. And that's always, I think it's pretty tough at a poker table actually to find that line a lot of times.
Right, and that goes back to Star Trek. You know, you know, the benefits to many far outweigh the one. You know, you can't just make one person happy and piss off nine other people at the table. So
yeah.
So hey, you know what? We get to complete O'Malley's move today. People are clamoring for it because you know, we did the show in between from the ship, so they're like, "What's going to happen with part two? When are you guys going to do part two?" I didn't expect that, but yeah, whenever we're on the ship, we tend to not do O'Malley's move because we're not in front of our computers, we don't have the hand in front of us, and you know, it's a quick, short show. We wouldn't want to shortchange O'Malley at all, so we're going to refresh our memories because way back 2 weeks ago when we did part one, you probably all forgot it already, so here is part one of O'Malley's move.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're playing in a pretty tough 1-2 No Limit Hold'em cash game. We haven't been at the table long and have $209, up $9, which is pretty average for this table. The big stack only has about $250. The under the gun folds, and the plus one raises to $7. This player is tight and passive. He's got a good handle on the game, thinks before he acts, and is solid when it comes to reading opponents. He started the hand just shy of 200. It's folded around to us in the big blind, and we look down at the ace of diamonds, ace of clubs. A perfect scenario. Since he raised from early position, it's safe to assume he has a big hand. He doesn't seem like the type of player that would make this move with air. We decide to make a raise, hoping he'll come over the top. We make it $20 to go. Our opponent takes his time before calling the bet. There's about $40 in the pot when the flop comes down all kings, spades, hearts, and clubs. I like this flop, but our opponent could have a king. We're going to find out. We lead out for $25, and after some slight thought, our opponent raises to 85. Remember, this guy is usually tight and passive. What's the move?
So O'Malley said we bet to find out where we were in the hand. So what did we find out? Nothing! Nothing! This is the best piece of advice that Brian Denenshire gave our cruisers 2 cruises ago when he came on this ship. He's like, never bet out to find out where you are in the hand. That's ridiculous. And I think in this case, it shows why. We got no information, right? Yeah. So our opponent could have a smaller pair. Maybe he's bluffing. Or he could have the case king. All we quote-unquote found out here is that he doesn't have a hand that he wants to fold yet. I would have much rather attempted to walk the dog here and let him make the first move. Now we're stuck in a does-he-have-it-or-doesn't-he quandary. And our hand is obviously way too good to fold here, but I don't think it's good enough for us to raise based on how we played it. So I'm going to call and see how the turn develops.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago I wrote call. And I said if he has a king, he will bet. If he doesn't, he won't. And then we can take our time betting and do the walk and the dog. Because, yeah. You know what I mean? There's no way he's going to check the turn if he has a king. So if we call and he bets, he'll have a king. If he doesn't, he's not betting again unless he's bluffing. So, I mean, I just don't see any reason to raise here. And I don't think he's going to bet the turn. I don't think he has the king, but who knows. All right, well, that's everything we need to say, right? Let's see what happens here.
Hello again. I think we can narrow his range down quite a bit. He raised from the plus one, and he's a tight player, so it's unlikely he's making a move on us. I'm thinking he has something big. It could be something like ace-king, aces, or maybe queens. He also could possibly have something like jacks or king-queen, but I'm going to go ahead and say those hands are unlikely. So once again, it's gut check time. I just don't think I'm going to be able to fold the second nuts here, and I don't think calling is a very good option. Because unless the case-king hits the turn, we're going to be in the same position we're in now. Out of position with the second best possible hand. We shove. Our opponent lets out a groan, which is music to our ears. I just can't fold this, he says, tossing in his chips. We table our aces, and our opponent shows queen, queen. The board runs out dry, and we take in the pot. Phew. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying sometimes you just gotta take the leap. I hope to see you on the felt.
is right. All right, we're going to go off on a little tangent here because it's not exactly about this hand, but I think there's shades of it in this hand. So I'm not criticizing O'Malley with his rant.
Right.
But it's the general situation because we discussed this scenario at the poker roundtable last week. We got a lot out of that roundtable.
Good.
It's like the third time I brought it up now, right?
Yeah.
But one of our participants in that roundtable said something like, we talked about a hand in general. He's like, that he had the second biggest boat and quote-unquote couldn't fold. And my answer is, why not? Why does it matter how strong your hand is? If you run the numbers and you think there's a decent chance someone has something better, you're just going to call because you got a great hand, but the guy next to you has a better hand? you know, so back to this hand, I never considered folding this hand, but so it's a different story. But I think it does illustrate that trap that players get into of focusing on their hand, and specifically their hand rank, and not so much on your opponent's hand. I mean, this goes back to a couple shows ago when we had the King-King scenario, which I kind of barely remember, but obviously I must have indicated that I was willing to fold that King-King. And one of our listeners is still laughing about it, which is funny because the opponent in that hand emailed us and claims to have had aces.
Yeah, yeah.
Vindication, not that you believe it, not that the listener believes it, but,
yeah,
but it doesn't matter. I mean, it's this whole case here. I mean, this is a monster hand, right? We have aces. The flop comes king, king, king. We got the second nuts, but it's the second nuts.
Right.
It reminds me of Nick Cage and Honeymoon in Vegas, right? I had a straight flush. It's almost unbeatable. Almost unbeatable isn't unbeatable. I know that now. It's the same thing.
That movie sucked, by the way.
Oh, it's wonderful.
I knew you'd love it.
But you know, so... maybe it's my Omaha sensitivity, because in Omaha you see this often. You know, you've got like nuts straight on the turn, and then the river quote-unquote improves you to bottom boat.
Yeah.
And you get excited because your hand improved, but you end up losing the hand. When that card wouldn't have come, you would have won because you had the nuts on the turn.
Yeah.
But people just get excited. Oh, my hand's better now. No, it's not. It's worse. The only good hand you have is a winning hand. All other hands suck. So I think that's the scenario here we just got into. We're like, oh my god, we got kings full of aces. This is awesome! Well, it's not, because a king is a very likely holding for someone. I'm not going to play scared here, but, you know, I wasn't as excited about this as O'Malley was, but obviously, you know, I gave three scenarios of what this guy could have, and he had the one that was great, and O'Malley got his stack, and so I'm all happy for him, but... trying to take the lesson a little farther, I guess.
Do I need to say anything now?
I don't know. Did I leave anything left?
Well, I mean, you went on and on and on after you covered everything. You said Scott's final thought, but somehow it wasn't. He had more than a final thought on this. What I found kind of interesting was that queen-queen was up against ace-ace preflop, and it all went raise-call. That was it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, how did that queen-queen not... I mean, I think I might have re-raised with queen-queen. Didn't re-raise. That I mean, I guess, yeah, you can smooth call the queens or whatever, but, I mean, either O'Malley had this really, really... I mean, if this person was really tight but solid, which is what the description was. I mean, I know passive was in there, but, I mean, we only made it, you know, when we re-raise, right? It went $7 and we re-raise at $20. It's just like, wow, okay, so do you really believe you have king-king or ace-ace? If you really believe you had king-king or ace-ace... then why are you calling? And if you didn't, why aren't you re-raising? You know, it's kind of a weird...
Well, I'll add to the fable out there of everybody wants to play against Scott here. I generally wouldn't re-raise with queens there.
Okay. That's not wrong.
And I can't explain why. I think it's just I don't like to bloat the pot pre-flop. Kind of figure if I get a raise in and somebody re-raises, that's enough money pre-flop. Now, obviously, there's tournament scenarios and things like that where it's different, but we're in a cash game here, right? So... I don't necessarily want to bloat the pot right here with... It's not because I'm scared that he has kings or aces, which obviously we probably should have been here. It's just I think we got enough money in the pot now. And, you know, so now that raise, maybe that gets him to fold. Probably not. Going to get him a call, and then we still don't know where we are at that point, right?
Yeah.
Or he's going to shove on us, and then we're going to have to decide where we're going to shove, and most people are probably going to shove, and then that's what's going to happen, guys, in terms of races. And the players are going to go, I knew it. And, of course, everybody's going to say, well, if you knew it, then why'd you call?
Yeah, the thing that gets me is if I make it 60 after that 20 and then he shoves, I think I can get away from queen-queen. you know, and it only cost me 60, whereas now it costs this guy his entire $200 stack. So anyway, but no, I hear you though. I don't see any reason not. I could play it both ways. I could call and whatever. But then the person making it 85 after the flop, that's the key right there. If you have four kings, you're not making it 85. You know what I mean? You were just calling.
You know what? That's right? A very good point, actually. That's a very good point.
So that's
well,
why
you
I
know, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe not.
I mean, unless you're positive he has ace ace, there's nothing you can do. There's no way you're going to lose. You're going to lose this guy if you make it 85 and you have the fourth king, unless he has ace ace. That's a specific hand you're raising for there. Yeah. And that's not right.
It'd be different if it was flipped, because really, you can make a case that O'Malley was just continuation betting here. And if that's the case and you raise, then if he has nothing, he's going to fold. But if it's the flipped around the other way, then I think that person has to have something at that point. And I would probably raise with the king. But yeah, you're right. It's
I just see no scenario. Even if he has his continuation betting, then you just call and say, go ahead, keep continue betting. And if you don't, then I'll bet if I have the fourth king, which is why I said on my actual before we heard part two was call. Because if he has a king, he'll bet again. And if he doesn't have a king, he'll check because now he's afraid that we have the king. So that's why I said just call, and not just because I couldn't get away from the hand. I felt like if this guy has a king, he's going to bet. He's not going to bluff again with a queen or queens.
I'll say the worst play, I think, is him calling us after we show up, right?
Yeah. I mean, how do you think that he doesn't have a king or ace-ace there now? You know, there's just... I mean, I guess he... I mean, he did groan. So
yeah,
it probably wasn't easy for him, but maybe he thought you had Jack and didn't.
Well, it goes back to the scenario I was talking about. He just got in love with his hand, you know.
Yeah.
Got the third nuts here. How can I fold it?
Well, but I agree, though. I'm not going anywhere. I don't. That raise to 85 means he doesn't have a king to me. So there's no way. But the shove, though, I didn't like the shove. To be honest, I thought there's no way this guy has a king because of that $85 thing. Let's just bet enough to get him to keep coming along. But it worked out for him. So
well, I think it's kind of cavalier too. I mean, what if you just called the 60 or 60 extra, right?
Right.
And let's see, that was a flop, right? So yeah, so the turn, then you could check, have the guy take another stab at it, and then check raise at that point if you wanted to. And even if he checks behind, then you could still bet.
Then you bet the river.
Bet the river. So you're not really giving up a whole lot of value there. And you're also potentially controlling the pot in case you are up against the case. Yeah. Or case king, I think. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I think the shove was a little cavalier for me.
Me too.
All right. But he won, so.
But he won. That's all that matters.
Go buy us a steak next time we're out.
Hi, this is Shannon Elizabeth, and you are listening to the Anti-F Poker Cast.
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. This week's sponsor is Smapsoft, creator of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products. Download the app today by visiting the iTunes store. It comes all the way from across the pond, Ben Heath in the jolly old UK.
Cool.
And, I had it up and now I lost it, so.
Lost from it. So, that sounds like a personal problem, buddy.
Talk about the Roman Empire or something. That's funny. Yeah, that's
man.
Yeah. All right, so here's what Ben says. He says, I've been listening to the PokerCast for the past couple months, and I've listened to a ton of past episodes. Funny thing about the Poker Radius thing, things are taking off there. People are discovering that we had all this huge catalog of shows when we were back at the times, right?
Right, right.
They didn't know about it. Now they're finding all those crappy shows when we're listening to them. So.
Hey, I'm proud of that.
I mean, the first
month and a half, maybe not so much, but after that, we started to hit a groove. I mean, we still were stupid, but the shows were quality.
Yeah, it looks like the pot odds went out. But
yeah, some people said we didn't do that bad, actually, once they heard it again. So just
well, so you know. Scared of those places. But. he said, my girlfriend lives a couple hours drive away, and I have to really thank you guys because your poker cast has kept me entertained on this boring journeys. And when I heard your appeal for Hands of the Week, I felt it was the least I could do. Record any interesting hands that occurred during my play this weekend. Look at that. Call to action. Nice. Action back.
That's why it's an Ante Up Nation, because we got each other's backs.
And all right, so he says, I'm very new to poker. I started playing a couple months ago when I heard Ike Haxton on the Joe Rogan Experience podcast and thought that sounds like fun. See, I mean, I think this is kind of cool that people are still discovering poker.
Yeah.
Now, he says he's a 22-year-old, so I guess, you know, it's not like he's 50 and like, hey, what's this crazy new game called poker? But still, I mean, it shows hope that people can't, oh, poker's plateaued. It hasn't. We just got to keep introducing people to the game.
Right, exactly.
All right, he says, I'm a 22-year-old, dropped out of university, and now playing entrepreneur guy that has the personality to get completely obsessed with things, and that's what I've done with poker. Hey, I'm right there with you, buddy.
I like the UK, they say, dropped out of university. I love that, because that's correct. It's just that we don't say it over that way. We say we dropped out of college.
We say a lot of things that are incorrect here.
Yeah, and we always put the or the in front of university, you know, because we think of it as a building rather than... It's just so cool, the way the different nuances of language. But all right, go ahead.
Yeah, particularly British. I love it.
Yeah, I love it.
He says, I play every day and studying up on it as much as I can, but I know I'm still very much a rookie, so feel free to obliterate my play if you feel it's subpar.
Okay.
It's like when people give us permission to do what
we're going to do anyway.
All right, so he says he's learning the ropes and the micro stakes of Poker Stars. He says, I live in the UK, so sorry to rub in the whole online thing. No, you're not. Then
you
go.
You know you love it.
All right, so let's see. He sent a couple hands, and I'm going to pick hand number 2 because I thought that was the best one. So
okay.
Let me figure out where that is. All right. It's 9-handed, 2-cent, 5-cent online cash game.
Right in my wheelhouse.
All right. And he claims this is a bit more of a situation. We'll see.
All right.
I sit under the gun with squiggly $6 and look down at ace of diamonds, ace of clubs. Fold!
Flop's going to come king.
The guy might have 7 deuces. He's going to flop it. Come on, guys. Aren't you listening to me?
Flop's going to come king, man. You're screwed.
The villain of this hand has squiggly $7 and is in middle position. He says, this player has shown he's a bit of a calling station, having called down top pair weak kicker on 3 streets on a dangerous board and was beat by an obvious straight. All right.
Okay.
Slightly covered and a little bit of a calling station.
Okay.
And I make my standard open raise. Actually, I guess I should stop and say, what would you do, Chris?
I think I would make the standard open raise. No, but really, when he says my standard open raise, I'm hoping that his standard open raise is basically what's working at the table to narrow the field a little bit and not just what he always does. Not that I don't ever say that that's wrong. I wouldn't condemn him from doing the same thing all the time when he raises. That's proper. But what I mean is, at this table, if you've been playing for a while, you're trying to thin the field with aces. You don't want a lot of callers, so... whatever has been working to thin the field is what I would raise to. So, whatever that would be.
Okay. he says his standard open raise is 20 cents.
Okay.
So, 4x.
Yeah, 4. I mean, online, a lot of guys do 6x or whatever. I mean, but it's been a long time since I played online. Maybe it's 4x now. Thank you very much.
We'll have to go to the UK and find out, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So he says, I make the raise 20 cents, and I hope everyone doesn't fold. I hate it when that happens. I hate it less than when somebody calls and sucks out of me.
Yeah, exactly.
The villain calls, everyone else folds.
Oh, there you go. You
perfect
got
desired scenario.
Yeah, desired.
Heads up with the best hand. Actually, not perfect, because we're out of position. But other than that, that's the only thing I can do.
Right, right.
All right, pot's 47 cents. Flop comes jack of spades, deuce of spades, 4 clubs. Clubs. Clubs.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, obviously first act.
Yeah, we don't have the flush backdoor flush draw. We have no spade in our hand. But, I mean, really, what kind of straight is out there? Nothing. So, really, the only thing we're worried about is a flush draw, and you can't worry about that now. You have to say, hey, these are all unders. There's no paired board. There's no 3 to a straight, 3 to a flush, or anything like that. Kind of like this. So, but we do want to protect a little bit. So, I don't know. I'd bet, like, almost pot, like 40 cents maybe. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, we talked again at the round table about keeping your bet sizes consistent. And, you know, I was telling them the whole 2.5x pre-flop, add a big blind to the for every limper. And it kind of blew their minds. They're like, well, what about aces? I'm like, that's the whole reason. You don't want to raise more with aces than you do with anything else, and people will figure it out, right?
Right.
And then, like, what about the flop? And I'm like, well, the flop, too. I think generally you want to have the same bet, depending on the flavor of the board here. And this is a little wet board, so I'll usually go 2/3 a pot, but I don't have a problem with the pull pot. So I would say somewhere between 32 and 47 here.
Yeah. I'm with that.
All right. Our hero says, the flop is great for me, as there are no real straight draws, and I could easily get paid off with hands with a jack in them. I want to get money in the pot and protect against the flush draw, so I bet on 35 cents.
Yeah.
Split down the middle.
Yeah, it's not bad.
It's almost hard to believe he just started playing poker.
Okay.
The villain calls. Oh, and the cutoff falls. I guess the cutoff decided when to play after he folded before.
Oh, so we had another player in the hand.
Apparently, he just randomly showed up.
Oh, okay.
It's all right. Ben's new to the game, so you know he's leaving some details.
All right, that's fine.
Intents and purposes, we're still heads up, right?
Yeah.
So he says, I think the call can mean any jack, a flush draw, a middle pair like 8-8, even a slow played set. Could be a couple of things.
Right, yeah. Right now, it could be a lot of things. But we think we're ahead. We're hoping it's something like jack 10, you know, and the guy is jack, and he's going to come along for the ride because he won't fold, because he doesn't fold at all. But that being said, if the turn's a blank, we need to put the hammer down now and try to get some money out of this guy and still make it a pain for him to call if he has two spades. So we're happy with the call. We just don't want that spade to get there. And if it doesn't get there, we want to make it more expensive next street.
Exactly. And I would say the only realistic hand that we're behind to right now is pocket jacks.
No.
That we're behind to?
Of set of deuces?
I don't think somebody's going to call his raise with a set of deuces, set of fours. I mean, pre-flop.
You wouldn't call a raise with a pair of deuces in your hand, pre-flop, in a two-cent, five-cent game?
Well,
what are you talking about?
It is two-cent, five-cent. I forget. Okay, all right.
Any game. I mean, I might try to vote, you know. I'm definitely going to try to, especially if I'm in position and I got pocket fours, I might call a min raise.
Okay,
good. Phew. I was thinking about splitting up the company right there. Going with somebody else.
But I'm folding king-king in this situation.
Yeah. And even to me, jack-jack isn't a real hand anyway, because I think jack-jack would re-raise and... Oh, re-raise. But anyway, pre-flop. But anyway, let's move on.
Even when I make mistakes, pearl of wisdom comes out.
Yes, you still get a pearl of wisdom out of there somehow. It's incredible. You're genius.
All right, the pot's now $1.17. I almost want to say $117, just to make it sound like we're making Ben play above his means, right?
Yeah.
$1.17. The turn brings a seven of hearts. So our board now is jack of spades, deuce of spades, four of clubs, seven of hearts. Spades don't get there. Straight doesn't get there.
Yeah, that's a good card.
Assuming we're still heads up that nobody didn't show up with cards in the turn now.
The only way it's a bad card is if you had pocket sevens and didn't believe us, thought we were just c-betting.
Pocket sevens is unlikely.
So that's the only way it helps this guy. There's no way he has jack seven or 4-7 or 2-7. So it's a good card for us. I tend to bet a little more than 2/3 of the pot when I see something that they could be hanging around for when somebody just calls my bet. If they don't, you know, because they may not believe me, but I'm not going to let this guy float and check, so... I'm not going to let him get there for free if he does have two spades. So, I don't know. I bet like a buck, maybe.
Mm-hmm. I didn't even go the whole pot because you got that little pot button there.
Yeah, maybe even go pot if they have a pot button.
Type out that 117, get carpal tunnel, just click that pot button. All right, so our hero says, this is a good card for me. I can't see this giving two pair, and obviously the spades didn't get there. I bet on, again, winning protect against the flush draw, so I bet 95 cents.
That's exactly
decent.
What baseball
a little less than we
yeah,
would.
Yeah, dollars, no difference.
Now he says, if I get raised, I can get away from it without giving him credit for a slow played set on the flop.
Yeah, I don't even know if I can get away from it, to be honest with you. I mean, if the guy had like king jack, he might do that with king jack, thinking he doesn't believe us still. Or
true.
I don't even know if I can get away from it. I mean, it have to be a set for me to be losing, and I can't be afraid of sets all the time. I mean, you could lose, and unless you get some real incredible, you know, vibes from this guy, which you're playing online, so I don't think you could possibly do that, but I don't think I can even get away from that anyway. But I agree with the bet size, so that's fine with me.
Okay. Our opponent snap calls.
How do you snap call online? That's easy. Not easy.
He's got the call anything.
Call anything? Well, that's only for limit, though.
Oh.
They don't have call anything for no limit hands. But it's the guy must have been...
Keep our as hard as you can. Snap call.
Usually a quick call means a draw, though.
Usually does, yep. I mean, I'm calling anything, right?
Yeah.
All right, so here says, I think I can most likely put him on ace-jack, king-jack, queen-jack, or some sort of flush draw. I tend to agree with you, the quick call is usually a draw.
Yeah.
But any of those other three are probably the most likely hands. I think we're looking at a high jack here, right?
Yeah, it could be a high jack, or it could be two spades. It's just, what two spades are they, and what are you going to do if a spade hits?
All right, our hero says if a spade comes to the river, I think I can still get away from it, but otherwise I plan to get it all in. Okay. Pot's now 307, and the river delivers a real conundrum card. The Ace of Spades. The final board is Jack Spades, Trey of Spades. Oh, that's Trey Spades. Used to be Deuce of Spades. Now it's straight Spades.
Okay.
Four of clubs, seven of hearts, ace of spades. Either way, a straight gets there and a flush gets there. But we have a top set now.
Well, I don't think we were up against sets. So that card literally means nothing to us as far as improving to me.
Mm-hmm.
All it does is hurt us.
It's like the Omaha situation, right?
Yes. And the other thing, too, is he said, hey, if a spade comes, I can get away from it. But now he's saying he can't get away from it because it gave him a set. But your set is only beating a bluff, really, anyway. There's no way that somebody had a set and didn't put the hammer down on you yet by the river. That spade sucks. I think I'm checking. And then if he bets an amount that I think is fair, I would call. I would check call. If it's something ridiculous like a shove, I'd have to really think about it. Because it felt like a flush draw after that final call the guy made.
He did.
So I think I can get away from it if the guy shoves, but if he just bets like a buck or two, I might call. Look, I don't know. I mean, I only started with $6 anyway. We've got about $2 in the pot from that. So I don't even know if I can get away from it, to be honest with you. It's two. Oh, yeah. There's $3 in the pot. If he were to bet three, there'd be six. I'd have three left or whatever. I don't even know if I can get away from top set, even though the set really means nothing. I don't know. I'd have to see how it happens, but I think I'm checking.
All right. I'm going to check as well, too.
Oh, good.
All right. So he says, Spades got there, but I have top set. I beat any other sets of villain with slow playing. I know he doesn't have the Ace of Spades, which makes a completed flush much less likely. Probably not much less likely. The Ace on the river will probably scare away King Jack, Queen Jack, but Ace Jack will most likely want to get it all in, which is a very good point. I have around $3 remaining, so make a pot-sized bet. No, I'm sorry. I have around $3 remaining, which is about a pot-sized bet.
Oh, okay.
If I bet and get shoved on, I don't think I can get away from it, so I pray he doesn't have space and shove. I'm going to shove anyhow.
Oh, he shoved?
Yep.
Oh, jeez.
Villain snap calls.
King, Queen, of
spades. Ten of spades.
Oh, ten of spades. I guess King, Queen of spades, I guess.
And our hero says, I try not to punch the wall.
Nah, dude, that happens every day. I mean, that happens all the time. You can't punch the wall over that. Especially because the ace really doesn't improve you. It does, but it doesn't. I mean, I don't see us beating or being up against any sets there. So it doesn't really help us. It improves us actually, but it doesn't really improve our situation. The guy, if you play it back in your head now, the guy was... let's see what my notes here.
He made a loose call pre-flop.
Yeah, he made a loose call pre-flop.
Flush draw, which no one leaves in a 2-cent five.
And we said he was a calling station. I wrote that down here. So, I mean, if he's a calling station who played crappy cards and called you down all three streets, then, you know, the way this went, you bet. You got a flush draw. You bet. He called. Turn didn't hurt. Help him, but you didn't shove on him, so he can call a pot-sized bet. If he gets there, get paid off if you do have an overpair. And you shoved on him when he made it. So... I don't know. I might have checked and see if he bet a couple of bucks. Then I could have called and got some information and then said, hey, you're not happy with this money if I'm ahead. And if I'm not, I got some information and didn't cost me my whole stack.
Yeah, check would clearly have cost you less here.
Yeah.
So they're giving you the option to fold, which he might have, he might not have. But it's unlikely that he would have shoved there. Well, maybe he is, 2 cent, 5 cent game. But you at least get the option of not having to shove and then lose your whole stack when you're wrong here.
Yeah.
Which we had a high probability of being wrong here because of the way the hand played out. So, but another good lesson that I think that's the ultimate lesson here is our hand improved and we didn't want it to. Well, we got excited that it did.
Yeah. Don't get caught up in, because just think about what it beats. It really only beats smaller sets, and those sets aren't. You know, like if a guy had a jack and you're shoving on him, he's not going to call. Only way he's going to call maybe is if he has ace jack, but then the flush got there, so he's going to be scared too. So you want a value bet there if you really think you're ahead. You don't want to just shove.
Yeah. And, you know, and Ben knew all this, too, which I think is great.
Yeah,
he knew it. He just forgot it.
Yeah, he's learning.
Oh, I know that. I know I'm not supposed to put my hand on the stove, but, you know, it's a really cool stove. We all do it, so.
And it only looked lukewarm, so I touched it. All right, Ben, don't worry about it. You'll get past this. Hey, don't forget, special week next week, the Conkies, right?
Honkies are back next week.
Honkies are back next week, everybody.
If you guys got any suggestions, send them to us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com.
Yeah, and we're going to have to explain what the Conkies are, because I think we have a whole bunch of new listeners now.
That's probably true, too. Conkies are kind of like our Oscars.
Yeah, they're like our Oscars. We'll explain the name. Well, I don't know. Like donkey, but we used to have the apes.
Apes banana.
And that was a banana, so the King Kong, Kong, Keys, that's how it kind of got to the name. So don't forget, next week it's like our Oscars for the stupid. And we can't wait to do that. So I'm Chris Crescenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.